Good morning. So right now, the mission team is in Seward helping the congregation there and encouraging them and facilitating services there. And this last week, before they got to Seward, they were in Nikiski for the whole week helping with a VBS there and helping out teach and also do different activities with children in the community there. And then right before they went to Nikiski, they were with me and a few others helping lead the youth forum in Anchorage and working with the church there and with youth from around the state coming together in Anchorage and spending the weekend. And things have been very fruitful, very successful. It's been really exciting to get to connect with people from around the state and to do that ministry again. And last week for the youth forum, there was a theme for that weekend, and it was Journey of Inspiration. And this idea of, like, what is the motivation behind our actions? Why do we do the things we do? Is there a path worth taking in this life? And that's going to be our lesson this morning, is this journey of inspiration. When I was in South Africa with doing the mission work there years ago, I learned something very, very impacting to me, and that was a method of catching baboons. I don't know if you've ever seen a baboon in person before, but they're quite horrible creatures, in my opinion. And the males grow quite large. Some of them can get almost as big as me. And their canine teeth, their sharp teeth on male baboons get even bigger than lions. They're quite vicious creatures. And so there's a method in which you can catch a baboon, and there's these traps that they're like about the size of a softball, and there's a hole in it, and you can mount this device somewhere, and it's a kind of trap. And I've told some of y'all about this before, but I always find it so impacting this analogy, because this trap, they put some nuts in there, some berries. And this baboon, this pretty big creature, will put its hand inside this ball, and the hole's big enough for its hand to fit through. And then when it grabs these nuts and these berries inside there, it then can't get its hand out because it's made a fist inside of this ball. And if it would just let go of these things, it would be free. But because it just wants these things so bad, it's stuck in there, and it will fight, and it will snarl, and it will flail, but because its hand is now a fist, it is now trapped by just this one thing so much smaller than it. And you can walk right up to that baboon and just whack it over the head or do whatever else you need to do to it to take it out. And all it would need to do would just let go to be free, but instead it wants to hang on to these little things that are really not that big of a deal, but because it wants it so bad, it loses its life. And so that's going to be a backdrop for our lesson this morning, this analogy of just trying to hang on to these things and that spirit of, I want this. I want this right now, and I am not willing to let go of it. That attitude we're going to see is something that does not come from God. That attitude is something that comes from somewhere much worse. So we're going to be in James chapter 3. If you have your Bibles, let's turn over there, and we're going to be looking at this passage to answer this question that I hope we all reflect on, is how are we thinking? How do we make decisions? What is our inspiration for the choices that we make? And are we going to be like these baboons where we just want to hang on to these things, we don't want to let go? Or are we willing to let go and be free and to live a life that we're designed to have? So in James chapter 3, we're going to be starting verse 13. We're going to be talking about wisdom that comes from above, or wisdom that comes from somewhere else. So starting in verse 13, it says, "Who is wise and understanding among you?" This is chapter 3. "By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom." So before we go further, I want us to define this wisdom. Wisdom is the application of knowledge, and knowledge is accumulation of details and information. So the cliche phrase is, knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit and wisdom is not putting tomato in a fruit salad, is how the saying kind of goes. Where wisdom is an application of knowledge, but and not necessarily knowledge, having an accumulation of knowledge itself. So there's a lot of really smart people out there that have accumulated a lot of knowledge, and they also live like fools. And so you look at Solomon also, who he had lots of wisdom, and he used that wisdom a lot of time, but then also sometimes he didn't apply that wisdom that he had received. But wisdom is the application of knowledge. And before we go further, I want us to take inventory of how much knowledge have you received? How much knowledge do you have access to? And this always causes me to think when I take a moment and recall, how many church services have you gone to? How many Bible studies have you participated in? How many personal Bible readings have you gone through? How many podcasts and lessons and series have you taken in, or Lord's Supper talks? And you start adding it up for a lot of people here. It's hundreds, so many thousands amount of information. And I often imagine, too, if I could sit side by side with a first century Christian, you know, before the Bible was written and or at least accumulated exactly like we have it here today. If I could sit side by side with a first century Christian and he and I could converse and he would tell me and get to know me, wait, you have all of the prophets and all of the law in your language? You have all the letters of the apostles in your language and you can read and write? You have a library of 66 books from all the things that God has inspired his people to record, and you can read and write it, and you have it. And if that person was then to then inquire about what kind of life am I living, and how does my life harmonize with the amount of knowledge I have, and he, I would imagine, would expect me to be a very mature and fruitful spiritual person. And that's, I look to God for direction in that, but it challenges me, and like I have received a lot by being able to hold this, by being able to read this, and I want to be wise. I want to have an application of knowledge that you and I here in this day and age and in this place and in this country, we have been invested in with much. And so this idea of wisdom, that we have a lot of potential for wisdom that can come from God because we've been given a lot of knowledge. Verse 14 here, continuing in James. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. So here we have a call for honesty. If our lives and our desires don't line up with what we see here in the truth, then be honest about that. The last thing anybody needs is somebody playing pretend with why they're here, what they're doing with their lives. And no one, last thing this world needs is someone saying, yeah, I follow Jesus, when they don't actually even want to follow Jesus. And so at least when you can be honest, now we're actually living in a real world where we know what we're all working with and we know what ourselves are working with. So before we even get into other verses here, there's a call here for, let's be real. Figure out what's going on. Don't play pretend. Playing pretend does no good to anybody. And we see verse 15, this bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. We get some explanation for what those things are and also how detrimental and horrible these attributes are. Verse 15 says, "This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual," listen to this one, "demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice." This was one of the most shocking verses I've remember reading in my own personal Bible study years ago. Just the stunning definition here of bitter jealousy and selfish ambition being described as demonic. When I think of something demonic, I think of something Hollywood has portrayed with unnatural movements and, you know, demon summoning and just all sorts of conjuring and witchcraft and sorcery and you're just hideous, grotesque monsters and horror films and things like that. But here, Scripture describes the demonic as selfish ambition and bitter jealousy. And you could compact that down into just pride. That pride is a demonic trait. And it's not just a demonic trait. We see here that from it flows, it comes every vile practice. It's like pride, this bitter jealousy, this selfish ambition is this sewage pipe in which all other filth flows out of. And that's kind of helping us understand what a pitfall, what a cliff to walk off this bitter jealousy and pride is, how deadly this trap, this baboon is reaching his hand. Like if you have the, if you're wanting to have a life that's self-focused, if your life is revolving around you, it is an evil, evil thing for that to be there. And to have that now revealed to us is now starting to show us just kind of how perilous this type of attitude is. And it's a good wake-up call for us to recognize that having a life that is self-focused is not just messy, it's not just harmful, it's not just inconvenient, but it is evil. It is satanic. I remember throughout my childhood different movies or different books or different things that were popular at the time, and a lot of people getting up in arms because this thing was, you know, demonic because it portrayed whatever. And maybe those things had some themes in it that were not great to really get involved in. But if we could have just a really clear discussion about what actually is very demonic, which is very evil, is having selfish ambition and bitter jealousy. That in itself, though, that's the real cliff to walk off of here. And to, we want to know, when we talk about, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. It's like, well, what do we wrestle against? And what are these rulers and powers and things that we're at odds against? And the conflict, the battleground is right here in our minds and our hearts. And we see it here being painted clearly, bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, where you're like, I just want this thing. I just want it. I want it so bad, I'm not going to let go of it. I want this thing. I want this person. I want this place. I want this law. I want this whatever. You pick something, and you just like want to hang on to it. And I've learned that anything you're not willing to let go of is a red flag. Anything you can't walk away from, then that thing now owns you. If it's a job, if it's a person, if it's a relationship, if it's something in your past, if it's something maybe in your future, if it's something about a place or an opportunity, if it's anything other than Christ, and you're like, I need that thing now owns you. And that type of craving is like a baboon putting his hand in this trap. And from this comes every vile practice. This is the source that of everything wrong in the world. It's really easy to look around the world and be like, this place is messed up. There's a lot of things going wrong in society, in our country, in other countries. And we have a lot of ideas on what we think we should like fix it. And a lot of times people give the wrong answers to a bad problem. But here we see the source. The problem is bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. And the only person you can really change or affect or allow to be changed is yourself. And looking into your own heart and letting the Lord help us see, we need to have a life that's not about ourselves. We need to have a life that's not about, I just want to have this one thing, but learn how to release those things and then to live a life that God intended you to have. And that's what I'm really excited to talk to you about today, because we can see what this wisdom from below is, that's earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Now we're going to look at wisdom that comes from God, something not from inside of ourselves, but from somewhere else. And I have noticed that you look at our society, and I think our culture is really hungry for what we're about to talk about. I think people are really starving for something real and something true and something that they can stand on that's objective, some objective truth and morality. Because you look at just the last real kind of like 80, 90 years, we have this modern era where it's just pure science, where it's like, well, it seems like we came from this rock that then had goo growing on it, and that goo over time randomly turned into us, and when we die, nothing happens. And people thought about that over a while and realized that doesn't really like help me in my life, and that actually doesn't satisfy me. And so they started looking for truth and started looking for things maybe more than just going from goop to nothing. And they started looking inward. We get to this postmodern era where it's like, you find your own truth, find your own fulfillment, look inward and do what you think is right. And over the last few decades of trying to do that, people have gotten even worse in realizing, like, I don't have the answers. I look into myself, and it's even worse. And that type of thinking, I think, is now creating a realization and even to a point of desperation of, I need a savior. I need something to hang on to. I need something to redeem me in this place, because the answers aren't just around me and the answers aren't within me. Maybe the answers are above me. And I think people are hungry for that. And that's an exciting thing to get to dive into ourselves and then to share with the world around us that there is not only the unspiritual and the earthly and the demonic, but there's something that can come from above. And that's what we're going to dive into now. Verse 17. But wisdom from above is first pure. So before we go any further, sometimes in these lists we can run too fast and not take time to think about each of these things. So wisdom from above is first pure. Purity is something we sometimes take for granted and we neglect how important having something to be pure is. For example, can you imagine if God was mostly good? Could you imagine praying to a God who was good most of the time, but sometimes, occasionally, could be evil towards you or towards somebody else? Could you imagine if God's word was only mostly reliable, but you didn't know which parts weren't? Just how unstable that would be? The example I gave with the youth last weekend was if Cocoa Puffs is the cereal, and there's these little brown balls of cereal. They're chocolate flavored and they're brown. And I said, imagine you have your bowl of Cocoa Puffs in the morning and you have these 99 Cocoa Puffs, but one of them is a rabbit dropping. Okay. It's just one. 99 of them are good. Like the vast majority is good, but one is impure. Are you gonna eat breakfast just like normal? Are you going to, at the very least, be a little more cautious and not drink the milk? I mean, you're going to want to be a little careful now and on edge. And we take for granted how good God is and how important it is to recognize that what God gives us is pure. The wisdom that God shares with us, the application of knowledge that comes from God, is not mostly good. It is entirely pure, and that's something we can trust, and that's something, that's a rock you can stand on, that Jesus wasn't just mostly a great guy, but he is goodness itself, and that's who we follow, and that's an exciting and a great thing to stand on. So the next thing that we see wisdom is, in continuing in verse 17, is peaceable. And peaceable is this, when the Scriptures talk about peace. This idea of peace is completion. It is a wholeness. It's things being made the way that they're supposed to be made. And that's an exciting thing when thinking about this wisdom that comes from above is something that's going to help us be what we're supposed to be. And we're helping other people be what they're supposed to be and to step into really the destiny all humanity has of being in right standing with God, being his people, being redeemed, going on with him forever. And that is this wisdom coming down from above is a completion upon us and on other people as well. The next attribute of wisdom we see here is also gentle. Gentle is also a really important aspect to reflect on for wisdom from above. That God is, one, being gentle with us, But let me first explain the word gentle. If you were to hold an ant is not a gentle creature. Just because it can't really hurt you doesn't make it a gentle creature. If you watch animal documentaries, which I really like to watch animal documentaries, I work with people all the time, and sometimes if I watch movies or TV, I need to watch something without any people in it. Because even like fake drama is still like, that's too close to home. Like that's too like, that's just too, it's, I need something with no humans in it. And so I like watching animal documentaries, and ants are brutal. Ants are super militant, and they're just savage a lot of time. They're very smart anyways. But just because it can't hurt you doesn't mean it's a gentle creature. The Greek word here for gentle and the idea behind it is that it's like holding a baby bird. It's like you could totally squish this thing. Sorry, that's a little vicious. You could totally hurt this thing, but you're approaching it with care, and you're approaching this entity with its best interest in mind. And so you are controlling yourself, and you're being tender towards this thing. And so how powerful is God? Like how he dwells in unapproachable light. He's almighty, and he's interacting with me. Like he is being very gentle. And this wisdom from above is then something that we also then live out and share with other people, where we are gentle with people around us. Have you ever been hurt by somebody? Are you capable of hurting somebody else? Yeah. Earlier in James talked a lot about that, about this tongue that can cause so many problems. Like it just got done talking about how much damage we can do to each other. So we approach each other with gentleness, because that's exactly how God approaches us. So next we have open to reason. I love this one. This one's so important, especially with being part of a church. I think open to reason is so essential, where we have a desire to continue to learn. I get to study with people. I get to talk with people a lot about the Bible. And if someone is a generation older than me and we're talking and we're trying to resolve something, my go-to approach, and you guys are going to learn my secret here if we haven't talked before, where I usually open this up and be like, can we both just answer a question of, do we still have things to learn from here? And I have yet to have somebody be like, no, I got it all figured out. But it's not just disarming, it's humbling and recognizing I still need to learn. I'm still growing. I'm not perfect. And I want to grow more. And that's a really great place to be. And sometimes we're not there. But wisdom that comes from above has that attribute where I want to keep learning. And it's really dangerous. It's really dangerous when we think that we've arrived. That's not a good place to be. And I wasn't planning on talking about this, but it's worth mentioning. There is a false humility we sometimes, as Christians, and especially Christians that have been Christians for some time, there is a stumbling block I have seen and myself faceplant over, and it's this false humility of, I'm just going to say the quiet part out loud, where, yes, I still have much to grow, I'm not perfect, but I'm the closest thing to it. Where we look at other denominations, other groups, other different bodies of people, and we're pretty quick to talk about how wrong they are. And then we'll talk about how, well, we're still growing. We're not perfect, but we're the closest thing to it on earth. And it's like, hey, oh my goodness, like gotta really tone that down. So open to reason really kind of helps alleviate that or remove that. We're like, and when you genuinely recognize, I'm still learning, I'm still growing, and that humility removes a lot of the trials that come from having that arrogance. It's open to reason, very important. We're still learning, and that's great. And on that note, the missionary I worked with in South Africa, he a brilliant man, he told me that when anybody becomes a master of something, whether it's mathematics or science or history or theology, whenever somebody becomes truly, like, really good at something, you can tell because they will express, the more they learn about a subject, the more they realize how little they know about it. Okay, that's a true sign of someone who has, like, gained a lot of knowledge and experience in any field. So whenever someone's talking to me like they just know it all, I'm like, you actually know nothing. Whenever somebody's actually like, I'm learning still so much about this, like, okay, now I'm more interested in you. So let's make sure we're not the ones that are like, hey, we got it all figured out. That's not the good place to be. Okay, so after open to reason, we next here have being full of mercy and good fruits. Something in South Africa, there's this proverb of sorts that they share where a lot of African countries, mostly women, but sometimes anybody, will carry large baskets or large objects on their head, and they'll balance them, and they'll walk for miles carrying these large things in baskets. And this proverb goes like something like this, where everybody has their own invisible basket on their head. And inside of this is what's inside them and what's inside their hearts. And you can't tell what's in somebody's basket until they trip or they get pushed or something causes that basket to spill over. And when that happens, then you get to see the contents of their hearts. And so the idea is you can't really tell what's inside somebody until they get tested, until they get knocked over, until they get pressured. Then the real them comes out, is essentially the idea. And I think that's a really interesting way to think of things. I think there's some practical wisdom to it. And this, what we see here, this wisdom from above is full of mercy. Like, it's filled to the brim of mercy and good fruits. And I love that idea because I look to Jesus in Luke 23:34, when Jesus is in the middle of being unjustly crucified. He's on his way to being executed, and he's the most innocent person to have ever existed, never will exist. He's on his way to be killed, and everyone around him is unjustly and malevolently abusing him, torturing him. And what's spilling out from him? He says, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." I mean, it's just pure mercy being dumped out on everyone around him when they push him over, when they smack him in the face with those rods, when they are ripping up his clothes, when they are abusing and hating him. He has already stored up so much mercy that it's just pouring out of him in the middle of such evil treatment towards him. Wisdom from above is full of mercy. I've told some of this to you before, but a few years ago, I got to work with a foster camp. They put us through some training to work with these young kids, and I had some 10 and 11-year-olds. I had two of them, and they were awesome, and I love them. And in that training, though, they had us be prepared that during the end of the camp, the kids are going to try to get us to hate them. And the idea, the psychology behind it is that it's easier, it's like a defense mechanism, because if they can get you to hate them, then it makes it easier for them to leave because it feels like they're not wanted and it helps them, like, move on. It's really sad. And so we have to make the decision beforehand that no matter what they do, we're going to love them. And, like, you preemptively choose to have this unconditional love, like, truly unconditional. It's like, this person will try to make my life miserable, and I am going to love them in spite of them trying to get me to hate them. And so by making the decision beforehand, oh, that helps so much instead of just trying to react to things. Because sure enough, second to last day, one of my boys looked up to me. He's like, "Mr. Mike, I'm going to be really bad today." Thank you for the heads up. And sure enough, he was rough. He was a stinker that day. But because we made the decision beforehand, they knew they were loved regardless of their actions. And I think of that's exactly what Jesus does. That's exactly what we're called to have, is we're supposed to make the choice beforehand. I'm going to love the world. I'm going to pour mercy on the world because I've received mercy from him. And so no matter what somebody does to me, I already got mercy loaded up, ready to pour out on people. And so that's this wisdom that comes from above. And that's something that's supposed to be stored up within us. So when we do have to turn the other cheek, when we get slapped, or this world persecutes us, or when we find ourselves abandoned or just mistreated, we don't even have to think about it. It's just mercy ready to dump out on people. And that's wisdom that comes from above. And good fruits is the same thing, is that our lives, when we get pushed, when we get knocked over, when we stumble in life, that good things come from our lives, that we look to be connected to Christ, and from being connected to Christ, there's fruit that comes from there. He's the vine, we are the branches. Apart from him, we can do nothing. And so when we have that Christ-likeness within us, that just overflows out from us into every part of our life. The next attribute here we see that's from above, this wisdom from above, is impartial. Now, this wisdom is to be for everybody. It's not something to one group of people at one time, or people that it's not an exclusive group. That this wisdom is to be received by everyone. Not everyone's going to want it, but it's for everybody if they want it. Earlier in James, God talks about if you pray for wisdom, he's going to give it all. He's going to give it to whoever asks for wisdom. And so if you want it, you can have it. And so it's for everyone, and we should be looking to share it with everyone, not be selective in who we think should be have wisdom. There should be no gatekeepers to wisdom. Next we have, then, is sincere. And again, I think this is something that our world is really hungry for, is sincerity. I think there's a lot of, through social media and other formats, there's a lot of pretty-looking lives out there that underneath are just a wreck. And Jesus talks about the Pharisees being like whitewashed tombs, where it's just like this clean surface, rough insides. And that's not how we're supposed to operate. We should be sincere that what you see is what you get with God's people, and that we should look to be at peace with everybody. We should do what's honorable in people, but we should not be playing pretend, like I said a few minutes ago. Playing pretend does no good to anybody. And then our last verse here, verse 18, a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Anyone ever work on a farm before? Okay, a handful of y'all. I got to work on a cotton farm for a while when I lived in Texas, going to school there. And when there's like harvest time, really, if like harvest is not like a little amount, like harvest is usually a pretty big operation. Even if in ancient times, if it's like harvest time, it's not like you're going to fill up just your own pantry with the harvest. It's usually a pretty big deal. So harvest, when talking about a harvest of righteousness, that's going to be like a lot of righteousness. And a righteousness is right standing with God. And a harvest of righteousness, like a big amount of righteousness, happens by people that sow peace. Again, peaceable peace is like things the way they're supposed to be. And if we're pursuing what we're supposed to be, then that happens. When we step into what we're designed to be, as humans, we're made in the image of God. We are made to be with God forever. To have the Spirit within us, to be his church, to be the bride of Christ, like that is something God intended from the very beginning. And to step into that, to receive that, that's real peace, because things are now complete. This is how God designed our existence to become. And so when we pursue that, then there's huge harvest of righteousness happens where there's this, it's not like a small thing. I just want to emphasize that what you're a part of and what we're pursuing, what we're walking in, this wisdom from above, is not just this like your life's going to be a little bit more convenient. Like it's not this self-help. It's not going to affect just your life, but this ripples out into the whole world. And that there's a harvest of righteousness when we're looking for things to be the way that God designed them to be. And so I want to encourage with you with that, this wholeness, this completeness. This is God's design. And I want to conclude with what Jason read for us earlier in Proverbs 3, 5 through 8, this idea of trust the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. You look at Israel when they're at their worst in the Old Testament, and the phrase that repeats throughout the Old Testament when Israel hits their lowest points is, every man did what was right in their own eyes. And that's that same idea of bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. It's that same attitude of, I want this. And by doing that, you chain yourself, you lock yourself to something not from God, from something not good. And in doing so, you can't go to where God then wants you to go. And you become trapped, you become stuck. And so this idea of then, when you do trust the Lord with all your heart and you're not leaning on your own understanding, he's going to make your path straight. That God's going to be involved in your life. He's going to give you wisdom to then follow him and to go the path where he wants you to go. And that straight path is going to lead straight to him and to be with him forever. And then it talks about there's this, be not wise in your own eyes. It's the same thing about being open, the opposite of being open to reason. And then it concludes in verse 8. With it'll be healing to your flesh, refreshment to your bones. Your bones, it's not like I'm actually going to be stronger because I have wisdom from above. It's like my core is going to be made right. Like the deepest part of me is going to be what it's supposed to be. It's just going to be complete here. And that's an exciting message for you to receive. And that's an exciting truth for you to share to the world, that there's a different path to go than what anything else on this planet has to offer. And that's what we get to walk in. That's what we get to live. And it all comes from Christ. So I'm excited for this life. I'm excited for our country and our culture. It's sad to see so many people floundering. There's a meme. If you don't know what a meme is, I'm sorry, but I will try to explain it as best I can. It's a picture that, or a series of pictures that gets passed around a lot that has like a joke or a meaning to it. And so there's a meme of somebody drowning and all you can see is just their hand sticking out of the water and they're like, it's slowly going down. And someone like looks like reach out to like help them, but instead they just high five the person that's going down. It's quite morbid. But the idea is just giving somebody, not giving somebody what they need isn't going to help them. And people need wisdom from above. People don't need the wisdom that comes from this earth or from the devil. People need wisdom that comes from above and only comes from Christ. And we can't share something we don't have. Okay, I'm going to say that again. You can't share something you don't have. If your life is about you, you don't have wisdom from above. If your life is about you, you don't have wisdom from above. This life is a story, and the main character is not you. And so what's coming out from your life? If your life is about trying to hang on to something, then it's not the life God has in store for you. To have an abundant life is to have a life like Christ, and it's a life that's full of mercy for other people. So if you don't have that, embrace that. If you've embraced that, it's now time to share that. And so with that in mind, if there's any needs here this morning that we can help with in that journey of receiving that or sharing it, we want to be the people God has called us to be. We want to be able to be a part of a harvest of righteousness. With that in mind, let's sing the next song.